Welcome to Scrappy ABM, your source for groundbreaking approaches that don't break the bank. ABM shouldn't cost $200K in tech to even get started. So if you want to get started with ABM or make your program even better without investing a massive amount of money, you're in the right place. Each week, we'll hear from the brightest minds in the marketing world who are redefining ABM, achieving incredible results with untraditional methods, limited resources, and a whole lot of creativity. This isn't a show about how much money you can spend on fancy tech or overhyped tools. Instead, it's about celebrating creative problem solving and the scrappiness it takes to get ABM right. We'll dive into how these marketing leaders built robust ABM strategies with limited resources, revealing the actionable insights that led to their biggest wins. So if you're a marketer ready to challenge the status quo and build a scalable, efficient, effective marketing strategy, Scrappy ABM is the show for you. So if you're ready to discover ABM strategies that are lean, impactful, and utterly transformative, let's dive into this episode.
What's going on, good people? This is Balaji with the Demand Wars, and I have your hero's hero, your marketer's marketer here today. Let me set this up for you. So he helps marketers grow their companies and their careers. He helps B2B marketers like you and me create predictable growth with account-based marketing. He's the director of growth at Gravity Global, the host of The Marketing Ladder, a podcast dedicated to helping marketers, especially during difficult times like these. He's a nurse husband. He's a stand-up dude. Please help me welcome all-around great guy, my friend, Mason Cosby. What up, Mason?
I'm so thankful I'm on the show because that is the best introduction I have ever received. And like I say, whenever somebody compliments me, my head just got so large, I'm not going to be able to leave my office for a few hours. So thank you for making my head too large to actually exit out of the door. Excited to be here today and compete in the demand wars.
Your reputation precedes you, my friend. You've been doing wonderful work with The Marketing Ladder. I think you're coming up on 100 episodes. You're like 93, 94 episodes in.
Yeah, so today released episode 93. I've got all the way lined up about 97. And episode 100 will actually be my wife interviewing me on my own marketing career. So that'll be a really fun episode.
Okay, so I love the origin story. I love how much your wife is part of the stories that you share. You're very much a family man. But I really love the origin story of the Marketing Ladder podcast because it's pretty distinct from other shows out there. What made you start yet another marketing podcast?
I think at the core, there's really two things that came together. One was a bit serendipitous. I had another agency owner friend that was like, hey, we should start something together. And then we started the lineup guest. He was like, actually, I can't do it. So it's yours to run with. So I had a bunch of really awesome marketers lined up for interviews with no topic and no title. And I personally was laid off as a result of COVID. And to that story around getting a job and, you know, really involving my wife, I'd gotten engaged about 20 days before I had been laid off, just gotten a house. So backup was up against the wall. So after about 4 months of really pounding the pavement, I finally landed a job. But that job was actually in a super toxic work environment that was not a great place for me to work. But it was how it helped me get my career started, specifically in the marketing world. So having that experience, I recognized that I wanted to create a resource in which we could find great marketers that would be wonderful mentors, wonderful managers, and really understand how did they successfully build their career with the inevitable intent that you could actually work for that person. So again, by creating this resource, my goal is that more marketers find a home that is where they can actually grow and thrive in their career versus what I had to experience when I know a lot of marketers experience where they get into a work environment that doesn't understand marketing, that just kind of gets thrown, everything gets thrown at them and they don't actually grow and thrive. They end up burning out and thinking that marketing is a horrible career. And the reality is it's a wonderful career if you get in the right environment. So my goal is to help people find that environment.
It's very succinct. And people who perhaps have not been through a similar experience might not recognize the importance, the power of working in a positive environment, one that you emphasize gets marketing. There's an idea that you came up with recently on LinkedIn, Mason. You talked about treating your career as a product. And I hadn't heard it phrased that way before. But what do you have in mind when you're telling people to think about their careers like a product?
Yeah, so I mean, I'm a really big fan of this concept of iterative growth in really most areas of your life. So as far as it relates to your career, most people, you know, just kind of land a job doing something. I don't really think much about it. They just kind of get a job. And I think that's where most people will likely start. And from my perspective, that's your minimum viable product. So you take that first role, that first job, and you're getting essentially out in the market to understand, where am I skilled? What do I enjoy? What am I good at? What do people say I thrive in? Where am I able to actually make significant impact? And then once you recognize the things that you're good at, the things that you enjoy, where you can make an impact, that's your MVP. And what you want to do from there is, again, treat yourself essentially as a product. And I know that people will have mixed feelings about that. But again, I look at every job posting as somebody is voicing, I have a problem and I need a solution. So if you can frame yourself as the solution to their problem, in the same way that we buy products for problems, we buy software to solve a specific problem, we view the software as a solution. It's the same thing with our own employment. So when you can frame yourself as a solution, then you can end up landing that next job. And again, you're taking the things that you learned, that what you were best at, and you're working towards creating in a job environment and a work environment where you're doing more and more of the things that you enjoy, more and more of the things that you make high impact in, so that over time, you're, again, continually iterating and growing in your own career with the inevitable intent that you end up landing in a job that is 100% your sweet spot. But again, even in my own career, I've done things where I thought that I really loved it and I thought that I would really make a high impact. And the more that I did it, I recognized, oh, I'm not actually that good at this. I'm not as able to make as high impact as I thought I could. So again, it's continually testing yourself, your own skills, your own abilities, where you make an impact, so that over time you can really hone those skills so that you are, again, landing in that sweet spot where you make high impact and you love what you do every day. And that, again, can change over time. So that's the thought process around treating it like a product, because when we put a product in market, we tend to, based on user feedback, iterate on the product. So again, treat your manager's feedback, treat your own thoughts and emotions around your job as feedback so that you can continue to improve yourself the same way that we improve products.
Yeah, that's really insightful. My understanding is that you didn't necessarily come into marketing or start in marketing. I think you started working at Parents and Kids as an account executive. And I think that perhaps has afforded you with a little bit of a different perspective in some fashion that we can all benefit from. I think it's really useful to think about one's, I'm a parent myself, and I tell my kids often about the difference between a fixed versus a growth mindset. I didn't learn this till I was a grown-up. You know, they're learning this in school now as fourth and fifth graders. But if you have a growth mindset as a marketer, and I think this is so important, not only in how we see ourselves, but also how we project ourselves into our careers. If you see yourself as, you're not a finished product, in other words. So to this concept of iterative growth, yes, you start with certain talents, certain skills, but you can evolve as the marketplace and your tastes also change.
Yeah. And honestly, we can talk through that for just a moment of my role at Parents and Kids as an account executive. I was selling advertising in a parenting magazine, and I was selling to small business owners, and most of them needed help understanding, okay, how does this ad fit into helping me actually grow my business? So as an account executive, I actually did like really basic level marketing strategy with these different business owners. And I was like, oh, I really love that piece. Like, that's the fun part. So then I recognized, okay, let me get into a role where I can think more about marketing over the sales and actually selling the advertising, selling the marketing. Let me do the marketing, which is how I then landed at Virgin LMS doing marketing. And then I recognized, oh, the industry I work in is super important and the work environment is super important. So that's when I inevitably transitioned over into the agency world, because I wanted to get around other talented marketers to grow myself and to understand marketing for better. So again, that is high level, the iterative growth of myself from Parents and Kids to a software company to now where I am today at what was Mojo Media Labs, has now been acquired and is now Gravity Global, the world's most awarded B2B marketing agency. So again, you can see lots of iterations in just a short time.
Mm-hmm. No, that's amazing. That's amazing. I love that. And I think some of this is going to be reflected in the discourse we have as we jump into the demand war. So Why don't we go ahead and take that plunge? If you're ready, we're jumping right into the deep end, Mason. Brace yourself, buddy. We're about to get into the demand wars. All right, people. So the first question that we've got is desert island marketer. So, Mason, you've been dropped onto a desert island. You've got a laptop. You've got Wi-Fi. And, you know, you might have to hunt for food and fish and whatnot. But we're giving you $1,000 a month as your budget. You are doing marketing for a B2B company. We want you to take us to market. How are you going to manage to do this on such a limited budget?
So do I have $1,000 total or $1,000 a month?
You got $1,000 a month, buddy.
Okay, perfect. So LinkedIn organic and using LinkedIn sales nav to work through actually building out a target account list so that I can connect and identify those that are in my audience that I want to be in my audience. So I'll start to slowly build up my LinkedIn following month over month. You can send out about 100 connection requests on a weekly basis. I think LinkedIn has actually upped that to about 250. So I'm filling that out. But again, sending out that on a weekly basis to continue to build my followers and starting to create content. Then I would take whatever leftover budget I have. I think SalesNav is what, like 30, 50 bucks. We may be on some rough estimates, but I also know that you can use Hatch for unlimited podcast editing. So what I would do is take a free Zoom license and I build a podcast that is around my targeted audience and then use Hatch. Actually, no, I'm going to save some money. I'm not going to use Hatch. I'm going to use Spreaker, which is $25 a month to do live streaming. Mm. No, StreamYard for live streaming. So I can live stream through LinkedIn and start to build an audience across LinkedIn, YouTube, and Facebook. Then I will use Spreaker, which is $7 a month to distribute the podcast. And then I will use Veed.io, which is, I want to say it's about $32 a month. So at this point, we've spent, I think, right around $100 to then and create some micro clips out of the podcast. So at this point, I have identified a targeted audience using LinkedIn Sales Nav to start connecting and building that audience proactively. I've started to identify out of that audience people I could invite onto a podcast. I'm using tools to create some live engagement within that audience and then using tools to distribute the podcast. And then I'm using these very basic video editors to create more additional content. Through all of that, what I would then do is take the remaining dollars,
Awesome. Hey, Mason, I seem to be having a little bit of audio trouble here on my end. Let me do this. Let me just refresh the page. Yeah, that okay. Let me see. Do we have your audio back? No, for some reason it seems to be stuck. Could we have you maybe refresh the page on your end? That ought to just clear it up for me.
All right, how are we now?
Oh, perfect, perfect.
Okay.
100%. That works. Sorry about that.
No worries.
We'll be able to edit that out. Yeah, my apologies. So the last part, I saw you ended your response. The last part that I heard, you had talked about Spreaker, you had talked about V.io in terms of distributing and creating clips from the podcast content.
I can just do the answer again.
Okay. If you want, that's fine. You don't have to do it all again, but if that's more comfortable, let's go for it.
Yeah, I think it'll be easier also for editing on your end. So okay. If you just want to ask the question, we can just start over.
Okay, cool. Appreciate it. Sorry about that. All right, so here we are. Desert Island Marketer, you got $1,000 a month. You've got internet, you've got laptop. You need to help us take our B2B product or service to market. So how do you take a product or service to market with a limited budget is the challenge.
So if I've got Wi-Fi, I've got a laptop, I'm getting $1,000 a month. Here's kind of my order of operations. One, I'm going to get LinkedIn Sales Nav with the intent that I can look at who are the different companies and starting to build out targeted lists of people to connect with the intent that over time I can start to build my audience. Based on what I can see right now within LinkedIn, you can send out about roughly 100, maybe 250 connection requests on a weekly basis. So that's the best way to proactively build your following and your audience. Then I will start to create content on a daily basis that is helpful and valuable for that specific audience and start to engage with them as well. So that is, I can't remember how much LinkedIn Sales Nav is at the top of my head, but it's not super expensive on a monthly basis, which I'm going to say leaves me about $950. From there, I'm going to get StreamYard, which is $25 a month, so that I can start to build a live stream podcast show that I can stream to YouTube and Facebook and LinkedIn so that I can start to build audiences there as well. And then I'll use Spreaker for podcast distribution across Apple Podcasts and Spotify and all those different podcast distribution channels, which is $32 a month. From there, I'll take the video from StreamYard and I'll use another tool called Veed.io, where I can do podcast video clip and do edits to create these great clips for social, at which point I'll then start to post these clips on social. And I think that should leave me about $900 a month. What I would also start to do is I would start to do live weekly sessions for the industry that are kind of Q&A based sessions that could be also live streamed through LinkedIn. I would use a LinkedIn event. I'd invite about 1,000 people. You can invite about 1,000 people on a weekly basis to a LinkedIn event. So from there, all of that is also free. So we're still at about $900. So at this point, we've got a podcast that's up and running. We've got a LinkedIn following that's starting to engage with content. We've got a weekly Q&A session. So we've got two podcast recording sessions on a weekly basis that we can then distribute through our podcast distribution channels. And what I would then do is take these micro clips that are also created, again, yes, social organic content from a personal page and a company page. And then lastly, I would take any remaining ad dollars to then dedicate towards LinkedIn ads with the intent of advertising these micro clips so that I can educate in the feed on our industry and on overarching thought leadership. Because through all of this, we're building brand authority. We're helping to raise awareness for the business in and of itself. And through that, the one-on-one connections that are built with our guests will help obviously with distribution, but also they can end up becoming referral partners. They can end up becoming potentially even inevitably customers, but also then through that building up an audience that will inevitably turn into customers as well. And then through all of these things, what you end up, you'll start to see is that you'll start to get invited to speak on other people's podcasts. You'll start to get invited to speak at virtual conferences and in-person conferences. So it really is overall just kind of this thought leadership approach with the inevitable intent that over time, you'll become an industry authority and thought leader that is respected. And all of that personal brand equity does inevitably transition over into the company equity, because at that point, you know, your face and your name is associated with your company, and they associate those two as both authoritative in the space. So that is the short of it, of how I would take $1,000 and create as much content in feed as possible to then generate demand to inevitably capture demand over time.
I love that, Mason, and I appreciate you giving that level of detail. You shared a couple of tools that I'm not yet using, so I'm going to go look up Spreaker and Veed. This is great. A lot of folks will be familiar with StreamYard. I'm really curious how your experience in ABM, account-based marketing, informs some elements of this strategy.
Yes. So thinking through this from an account-based approach, the people that I would connect with would all be target accounts. So again, we would go through the process of identifying our ideal client profile. So saying, what's their revenue number? What's their employee number? What's their industry? Are there any pieces of, you know, additional technologies that they're using that work well with our platform, for example, or another thing, just so I work in a marketing agency. What we've seen is that some of our best customers that we work with are on HubSpot, because there's a culture piece that HubSpot attracts. They attract kind of a mindset. So again, there's that element to it where, yes, technology, if you're in the tech space and integrations that are already natively built out, make it easier to onboard and work with specific customers, but also looking at technology to understand what kind of customers does that technology attract from a culture perspective. So you're also a culture fit with those that you work with. So again, you know, if we had a little bit more budget, we'd probably use a tool like a Zoom Info or a Sales Intel or a Slintel to build out this target account list. But what we can do is get a little bit scrappy and look at companies that we know that are on LinkedIn and start to, over time, look at similar companies. So again, this is not the most scalable way, but it's a scrappy way. And you can start to look at, again, what companies are in your industry that keep coming up and start to look at them from a targeted perspective, because especially in B2B, you know, many of us have very small total addressable markets. We've worked with clients in the past that literally have a total addressable market of 200 potential companies. So you can pretty easily identify who are those 200 companies and then start to very systematically build out connections and a following within those companies over time. And yes, would it be amazing if we had the intent data that would make it easier to recognize these people are actively entering into a buying cycle? Absolutely. But is it needed if you're scrappy? No. Just over time, recognizing that we're being really targeted, really specific with who we're connecting and engaging with and building an audience around that over time, they will inevitably buy.
I love that. I love that. Mason, you said two key words there that marketers have perhaps a love-hate relationship with. Maybe not hate, but over time. Like if we have time, you know, sometimes if you're slow cooking a nice roast over time, it's going to be amazing. If somebody asks you to microwave that roast, you're talking a different meal entirely. So this is actually going to transition us, Mason, into the second question on the demand wars. We call this 3-3-3. So you've been charged with creating demand fast. Maybe it's the end of the quarter. Maybe it's the end of the year. You have an unlimited budget this time, essentially an unlimited budget, but we need speed. So how are you going to do this? We'd love for you to answer this question. How are you going to create demand in 3 days? We call that the Tasmanian Devil special. In 3 weeks, that's the Roadrunner special. And then in 3 months, that's more of a Power Walker special. So first of all, let's tackle 3 days. How in the world are you going to get this done?
So 3 days, if the objective, now this is a clarifying question, I'll give you two answers. Is the objective to create demand, or is it to generate revenue?
That's a great question, Mason. So we're framing it as creating demand, but within 3 days, the reality is that you're probably not likely to take someone through an entire buying journey. So this might be more of a capturing of demand.
Okay. If it was just generate revenue, I'd look at our existing pipeline and work through what is stalling those accounts from moving forward and creating really targeted one-to-one personalized content and engagement around those specific accounts to really accelerate them, with the inevitable intent that, again, if they're already in pipeline, we should know their problems, we should know the buying committee, we should know their budgets, and we can just get them over into a closed one. So if I've got 3 days, that's what I'm going to do. The other piece is if I got 3 days and I'm trying to generate pipeline, I'm taking an existing client case study and getting really granular into exactly what we did to generate a client tons of revenue. We've actually done this in the past with a program called ABM Strategy That You Can Steal. And we just walk through existing client strategies and get into some pretty granular details around exactly what they did, how they generated the revenue, and the pitfalls that they experienced that would help others to recognize and to know before they actually step into building an ABM program. So you can build that deck in a day. You can also throw up a LinkedIn event. You can invite 1,000 people in a single week again. So if I've got 3 days, I'm building out that and inviting 1,000 people and hosting a live workshop where we can get some user feedback and create this really engaging, fun experience where people are stepping into, again, identifying specifics around how to build an ABM program,
So those are the two options around if I had 3 days. Now,
sweet, sweet. Okay, so let me just ask one question to go deeper. You've mentioned the LinkedIn events and inviting the 1,000 people. How are you inviting those people? Is it a manual going through your contact list?
So within the actual LinkedIn event platform, you can click the button invite, and then you can filter by location, industry. You can also filter by where they're currently, where they got their education from. There's one other filtering criteria that's relatively helpful. So I would, again, filter by location based on, you know, where is your largest customer base? And again, because you've only got, you've got 3 days. So filtering by location. And the other piece to also throw out is that you can only invite your connections. So this is with the understanding that you've already got the right connections at your targeted accounts. So, and you got to go through and actually manually click. Now, you can do some of it in mass. Once you've put in the appropriate filtering criteria, you can click one button that adds a lot of people. But again, I would go through and be pretty manual about who we invite.
Mm-hmm.
So again, I've got 3 days. Obviously, this is not the most scalable way to do this, but if I got 3 days, then I'm getting scrappy.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. All right, well, let's say you pulled off the 3 days. You survived that. Now you've actually got 3 weeks, which is still really short, mm-hmm. but compared to 3 days, feels like you can breathe a little bit more. What are you doing in 3 weeks? How is your strategy going to be different?
So again, I come at this from an account-based approach. So I'm probably honestly doing something very similar to the 3 days, but then after that 3 days, I'm getting really personalized, really targeted with our follow-up. So I'll give you an example of what we've done in the past with kind of a 3 week window. So we did a workshop that was called Fix Your Site from Search to Sale. So what we do is live website review. So we invite people to submit their websites for a review. So they're raising their hand and saying, I would like you to review my website. We send all of our promotion around our target account so that those that are registering are target accounts that are our ideal client profile, that are the right fit that we would want to work with. So again, we're then hosting this live workshop and doing critiques. And then after the event, we actually send personalized website reviews on a one-to-one basis and personalized technical audits. So helping them to identify this is where you are not technically sound, that it's actually hurting your website's performance because of your website health. So again, that process is labor intensive, but every time we've done it, we've sent out about, I think in the past year, I've sent out over 100 website reviews, and that's turned into 30 new websites with an average contract value of 30 to 60,000, which is also typically our land and expand approach. So we land them on a website and then we sell them on to ongoing marketing services. So again, 3 week window is a live workshop that is highly engaging, that is targeted in how we promote, and then really personalized follow-up on a one-to-one basis with the intent of turning those that were interested in getting their website reviewed into, I need a new website.
Oh, that's sweet. That is sweet. How much effort would you say, Mason, those website reviews tend to take you?
I can knock out a website review in about 30 minutes. So again, from I've gotten it down to a system. So I'm running technical audits using our tools like SEMrush in the background while I do homepage content audits and sales process audits. So I've gotten down to where I can do this really quickly. And then again, I've got about four things running at the same time because I've got to download it. I've got to upload it to YouTube. I edit it in YouTube and then I submit it over into a landing page. So through that process, again, it takes about 30 minutes per website. So it's a 20-hour investment in just pure dedicated time to get it knocked down. But again, at a conversion of we send out 40, we get 8 on average. It's a good use of time.
That is really cool. And I don't think a lot of people are doing that. It doesn't sound technically complicated, but it's just not a muscle that a lot of marketers are flexing, to my knowledge.
Well, because most marketers immediately think of scale and how do I reach the hundreds of thousands?
Yes.
When the reality is in B2B, you need to reach like 100. So again, that's the intent behind creating a form where somebody submitted their website for a review. There is express intent saying, I would like a review of my website. So we've asked our target accounts to give us permission to review their content and their website. And then we send it to them saying, you asked for this, here's the result. And I don't ask for a sale. I say, if you'd like to talk in further detail, we'd love to schedule a call on how we could help.
But I don't say this is what it would cost. Like it's very open-ended just to say, here's the content. Here's the information. If you want additional help, let us know.
You know, I want to ask about that, Mason. A lot of marketers find themselves in environments. We talked about marketers and work environments earlier. They find themselves in environments where even if they want to take that sort of soft sell approach, they might have pressure, whether it's from the VP of sales or from the C-suite, that says, we need to ask for the sale, we need to ask for the lead, and so on, as soon as possible. Or we need to get SDRs to outreach to all of these people and to berate them into talking to our sales team. Why do you think it is that your organization doesn't seem to be taking that approach?
Because we have the revenue, the pipeline's full. This is a totally different conversation anytime the pipeline gets too light. I always, when the pipeline gets light, it's like, how do we fill the pipeline? But if you keep your pipeline full because you genuinely help people and you're viewed as an authoritative, genuinely kind individual that does put other people's best interests first, they will inevitably come in and buy. It took time, about 6 months before we got to that point where our pipeline is maintained. Our pipeline hasn't dipped below 1 million in value in a year. And again, we've got one sales rep that's managing that pipeline. So again, whenever the pipeline gets to be about 600,000, that's when I start to get the questions. But if you keep your pipeline full, nobody typically asks questions.
Love that. Love that. Okay. You talked about this 6 month period in which you had to build up that pipeline level. So let's answer this 3, 3, and 3 question, the last portion of it. If you now have a full quarter, you have 3 months to create demand. How are you tweaking this approach that you've laid out?
I'm stealing the playbook from Metadata and I'm creating a day-long virtual conference. So Metadata created a day-long virtual conference called Demand. I did one similar, obviously on a smaller budget I did it all by myself at the time, but it was called ABM-a-thon. So it was a day-long virtual conference with industry thought leaders like the global head of ABM at HP was our headliner that spoke and talked through how she builds ABM programs. Her name is Richa Pandey. She's amazing. So day-long virtual conference that is entirely around thought leadership and walking through people how to practically execute and actually thrive. Because when you educate people, they view you as the thought leader. That was the biggest transition that really dramatically increased our pipeline. Because after the event was over, we actually created an ungated content hub that you can still access. If you go to mojomedialabs.com/ABM, you get literally 20 sessions of ungated content that are all around ABM. And we started to drive ads to it and actually get people to view the content that then started to come inbound and say, hey, we looked at ABM-a-thon. We watched, I even had somebody to say that I stopped watching my Netflix show and started to binge ABM-a-thon content for a week. I watched all 20 sessions and now I'm ready to implement an ABM program. So again, if you've got 3 months, it took me 123 hours to pull ABM-a-thon together. And I know because I work in an agency, we track time. So you can realistically, if you dedicated a month to do nothing else, you can build the entire program and then you launch it, you know, around week 6, and then you spend 6 weeks post-promoting the event using video editors to then chop up all the content. You give that to all your different speakers. They start posting about it. They start linking back to the ungated content hub. And you've created this massive amount of buzz around your business, around your topic, around your industry. And as a result, people, again, view not just the individual at that point, but actually your business as the industry thought leader.
Amazing. Amazing. I love that approach a lot. That's again, another one that isn't, it's not rocket science, but not that many people are executing it. You had something that you shared recently on LinkedIn, I think in the past week, Mason, and this was something I think you heard from somewhere else, which said the perfect strategy doesn't exist. Yep. Only the one that gets executed or only the one that gets done. And a lot of what you're sharing seems to reflect that sentiment.
Yeah, I, to a fault, am a big fan of done is better than perfect. Because especially in a small team, you can sit around and strategize all day long. But when you when you start to overthink the strategy and you don't actually execute anything, perfect strategies that are never executed make no impact. Whereas half-baked strategies that are executed make a larger impact. So again, everything that I talk about is iterative growth. I pulled together ABMathon that had 20 sessions and we spent less than $20,000, including my time, which was 123 hours. So through that, we had sponsors. Our sponsors were ABM tech vendors. They supported in the ways that they actually use their technology. So Sendoso sent gifts. Terminus ran Terminus account-based ads. Sales Intel provided the target account list with intent data. So we mapped all those things together. And then they were viewed as sponsors of the event, but they paid no monetary amount towards the event in and of itself. And then we covered the event platforms. We covered a lot of the promotion. We covered all the design, all the graphical work, and set everything up. So again, you bring all that together. Was the event perfect? Absolutely not. Did it get accomplished? 100%. Did we have 700 people register after 6 weeks of promotion? Absolutely. Do we have 16 hours of ungated ABM content on our website? Absolutely. And as we go through this acquisition, one of the main talking points of when we're ready to, after we fully integrated, start launching into our own marketing for the agency, we're going to that content hub to chop it up to immediately start promoting that Gravity Global has a dedicated team that is experts in account-based marketing. And here's our evidence. So again, it's created so much value long-term that if I just waited for the perfect strategy on how to do an event, it wouldn't have gotten done. Just wouldn't have.
That's phenomenal. Yeah. I love that. That allows us to talk about this topic. This is the next question in Demand Wars, Mason. And I appreciate you sharing the details, the 16 hours of content created, 700 registrants, 6 weeks of promotion, all really, really helpful. It makes this feel doable. But a lot of us have been hearing for the past 12 to 18 months, B2B brands need to market like a media company, or there's benefit in doing that. I'd love to hear what that means to you and what that could look like in 2023. What does it look like if we start to market like a media company?
I think it's creating genuinely valuable content and actually working through what is happening in the larger industry that you're a part of. So having a clear and unique point of view on what's working and what's not. I saw this post from Chris Walker yesterday that said that he's leaving Demand Gen, which honestly was a little bit dramatic, but it caught my attention. And he's talking about how he's building this new category of revenue R&D. It's a very unique position. Mm-hmm. It's a very clear point of view on what is and what's not working in the marketing industry. And if you look at any company, again, Refine Labs is another marketing agency, but they have done a fantastic job of operating as a media company with great success. And honestly, if you start to ask yourself, what does Refine Labs actually offer? Like, what is their product? People really struggle to answer that because they're like, well, I just know that they do demand gen. But again, nobody really knows until you've worked with them exactly what it is. And it's valuable. Don't get me wrong on that front. People have loved working with them, but they focus so much on being the media company that becomes the trusted resource for where you view how to do marketing that they don't even have to focus as much on the actual product itself. I've never seen a case study from Refine Labs. I don't know if they've actually had success with their clients. I've never seen an exact case study, but I know that they're so authoritative because of the media that they produce that I trust them.
That's remarkable. That is a remarkable statement. And you're right. A lot of that trust is already built in because they do something that I learned many years ago, delivering results in advance. They essentially give away what appear to be the keys to the kingdom. They give away some of their best stuff for free. Here, take it. Here's the strategy. Here's how we did it. And that builds so much trust that people then flock to them and want to sign up without the traditional levers of persuasion. To your point, the thing about case, I didn't think about that, but you're totally right. I've never seen a Refine Labs case study. I love that example. All right, cool. So, Mason, we got a couple more questions we're going to run you through here. The next one is something that we're calling the sunken place. And so let me set this up for you. So a lot of companies are struggling to make this transition from primarily focusing on demand capture to now broadening the scope and doing more demand creation. You talked about how it took you and your organization about 6 months before you could get to the point where your pipeline was consistently at a healthy level. And so for marketers who want to start to build these longer term demand creation programs, and yet they're afraid that if they stop sort of pumping for lead capture, the MQLs are going to drop. How do they navigate? How do they survive that 3 to 6 month period before these longer term demand creation programs start to bear fruit?
Two things. And this is not meant to be a joke. It's the reality, but qualitative data and an active job search. So let me clarify. When you can start to see that your best fit potential customers, whether you have a target account list or not, you can typically see, all right, that looks a lot like our customers. When you start to see them showing qualitative information that's saying that they're engaged, that they're having a good time, that they're finding value in what you're doing, though you may not necessarily have the exact leading metrics at that moment, what you can, exact leading metrics in a scalable way. A comment on LinkedIn will never show up in an executive dashboard. But again, it's almost, I would say, more impactful than the 100 MQLs that we generated because somebody showed up to a webinar. So if you can look at the qualitative data and really talk through, this is the quality of the engagements that we're getting. Again, in my case, it would be, we have CMOs at our target accounts commenting on my LinkedIn post or saying that they loved episodes of the Marketing Ladder. Qualitative data.
Mm-hmm.
What you then want to start to see is marketing sourced meetings. So the way that I have done that, and this is something that I'm sure many people have talked about, but it's looking at the inbound request forms that say, I heard of Gravity Global through X. So one of the things that was massively beneficial for us is when about 4 months in, we got the first inbound request that said, I've been following Mason Cosby on LinkedIn and needed help with my account-based marketing program. So I scheduled a call. The first time we got that, it was like, this is insane. Oh my goodness. They named somebody. Because that never happens. It typically is like, we found you through Google. You know, you came up in search. And you can then look at, again, marketing source meetings. So I listened to a podcast and heard about you. Anything like that. And so that will be the qualitative data, but then also looking at your attribution software. So HubSpot has built-in attribution software. You can see the different sources. And then additionally, asking them in that first call, hey, how did you hear about us? And seeing if what they said in that call matches what they put on the form. So those are the three sources that we look at as kind of the source of truth of where did this actually come in from. And as you start to see marketing source meetings increase, you can also then start to tell, is marketing source revenue increasing? So that's why it takes about 3 to 6 months, because marketing takes time to ramp up in the first place. And then once you've actually gotten marketing sourced meetings happening, you still have to run through your sales process, which for most B2B companies is at minimum 30 days. So you're still looking at another month before you actually see revenue. Yep. So again, that's why it's that 3 to 6 month time frame before you actually start to see tangible results that you can then point back to and say, okay, marketing was working. Now to that end, why you should also keep an active job search. People have their darlings. So if your entire executive team is married to the MQL and they say, all right, let's try something else. Like, let's do it. You know, MQLs aren't working. They're converting at 1% or 0.01%. You know, we're ready to make a switch. People say that, man, when they start to see those MQLs tank because we're not focused on that anymore. We're not measuring that anymore. We're not creating marketing to capture that anymore. Where are the leads?
Yeah.
And you've got probably 2 months to start showing results when the questions start popping up of where are the leads? Which is why I say keep an active job search. That way, if something goes horribly south, you're not starting from ground zero. You've already started to build some relationships in a place that you could inevitably land. So I'm not saying start applying per se, but I am saying start to build some industry relationships that in the event that something happened, you could call on that could help you expedite a sale or a job searching process.
That is really sound advice. Really sound advice. Thank you for that, Mason. We got a couple more questions here. If you have a couple more minutes, I'd love to see if we can get squeeze one or two more in. Awesome. I appreciate that, Mason. All right. So 2023 demand creation plan. What five things would you include and why? So we recognize that demand generation does include demand capture. You want to capture the people already in a buying cycle. Maybe that's 5% of the marketplace. But for the remaining 95%, they're the right target accounts. They just are not thinking about buying yet. What are the five things you want to do to make sure you reach them?
So I'm actually just going to walk you through what we're doing for 2023. So
cool.
As a part of the acquisition, so Gravity Global has acquired 7 businesses in the past 3 years, which means we all have different areas of expertise with now a significantly larger customer base. So the first priority actually for us is upselling, cross-sell, and generating demand for new services within our existing customers so we can expand within those accounts. So I would focus in 2023 on specifically customer marketing because you also get a much faster feedback loop. They're already paying you money. It's a great way to start generating higher revenue, but also getting honest feedback from the existing customers on why or why they didn't buy your services so that you can then go into the larger market and address those at scale. So again, everything that I'm going to talk through is how do we do this in a very isolated, clear testing ground and then scale it. So I think upsell, cross-sell, customer marketing programs are a must for 2023. And then out of that, it's then moving into, I'm a big fan of case studies. I think they're the best full funnel piece of content. So building out really specific and strategic case studies with the inevitable intent that that can be sales enablement, but also can be repurposed into thought leadership type content. Because even though Refine Labs has not made many case studies, if you can walk through a client, and I'll give an actual client of ours. We worked with a client called Embraer. They sell jets. We generated $15 billion for them in 2021. So walking through a case study of step-by-step, how we generated a client $15 billion that was the world's most awarded campaign, it's going to get a lot of traction. it's a great title. You know, a breakdown of the world's most awarded campaign that generated $15 billion. That's a title for a workshop. People are showing up. So again, then looking at that through the lens of step one is expansion. Step two is case study development. Step three is translating case studies into hierarching thought leadership. That can be done in a workshop format. From there, we want to repurpose content for social and then get really, really intentional about building industry relationships and connections through those that are at our target accounts. So those are the five things, because again, what you can do is marketing takes time. So if you focus on customer expansion and cross-sell, upsell first, you'll see quicker revenue. You'll see your pipeline get full more quickly. And then you can move into some of the more long tail things that take a lot more time, but you've appeased your sales team. You've appeased finance for probably the first quarter or two while you build out some more long tail things that will generate new customers and new pipeline towards the second half of the year.
Got it. Love that plan. And thank you for sharing those details. This is something you're actually implementing at Gravity Global. It sounds really sound. We're going to jump into one last question, Mason. This has been insightful. We're calling this one reality roulette. All right. So everybody's watched some reality show at some point in their life, whether it's a guilty pleasure or they'll actually admit it. You are now charged, Mason, with remixing an existing reality show where the cast members are all B2B marketers doing B2B marketing. What reality show would you want to remix and how would you change it?
I would do Love is Blind.
Ooh.
And remix that into essentially this kind of dating game show where sales is on one side and marketing is on the other. And you're trying to find that perfect match from a sales and marketing perspective so you can generate sales and marketing alignment.
Oh, that's hilarious. Actually, I don't know that I've watched Love is Blind. I see the trailers all the time. I certainly have seen my share of dating shows. How is Love is Blind different from like The Bachelor and some of these other dating shows.
So I genuinely have watched every season of Love is Blind with my wife. We love it. It's such trashy TV. It's our guilty pleasure. But essentially, Love is Blind, you have all the men on one side, you have all the women on the other side, and then they enter into rooms, and there's a wall between them. So you can only hear them. You can't see them. And then in order to actually progress through the show, you have to propose to somebody before you've actually ever seen them in person. So you get engaged, and then after you've all gotten engaged, you then go into this like honeymoon vacation type thing with all the couples that said yes. So then you get to see all the other people that you said no to, and then you have to go live together in the real world. So you go back to your day jobs and you have to live together for a couple of weeks, meet the families. And in a 4-week time frame, you're actually going from I didn't know this person to I'm married. So I think that could remix into, again, the Love is Blind portion where sales and marketing say, you know, we are going to be aligned. We're going to work together. And then we move into going into essentially a week of, for lack of a better word, conferences, because that's kind of where sales and marketing are standardly having to come together. So how do we make the most of the conference? You know, what do we do for this conference and doing some planning and then getting back into kind of the real world of your day-to-day mundane work outside of the conference season to see, can we still be aligned at the end of which you would then build a new sales and marketing department together. And we could call it, you know, Revenue is Blind. That's a dumb title, but I can't think of another one off the spot.
Oh, that's good, though. That's good. Hey, listen, you talked about how at times executives could have their darlings. They might be married to MQLs or gated ebooks, this, that, or the other. But if in this Revenue is Blind concept, we're going to go with that title, Revenue is Blind. But if in this Revenue is Blind show, the salesperson perhaps might be blind to the specific tactics, day-to-day tactics, and they have to maybe talk through philosophy or principles of marketing and vice versa. That could be really interesting. And then during the big reveal, they're like, oh gosh, you want to ungate everything? Is this what I'm getting married to? But they would have agreed in principle to what the end goal is. I think marketing is one of those professions, Mason, where because we all consume marketing and advertising, we all tend to feel like we all have a perspective, an opinion, which is fair. But then it also makes us feel like perhaps we can Monday morning quarterback folks who have been practicing marketing as a profession. And sometimes that can be difficult.
Absolutely. I think that's a great add-on to the Revenue is Blind concept.
This is great. All right, we got to get him out of here, folks. We've been listening to the Mason Cosby. He's the Director of Growth at Gravity Global, the host of The Marketing Ladder, nurse husband, stand-up dude, and ABM aficionado. Be sure to check out ABMathon, the ungated version. We'll link to all of that in the show notes. Mason, this has been amazing. Thanks for coming on the Demand Wars.
Thank you so much for having me, and I cannot wait to take down every other demand leader that you've had.
He's competitive too. I love it. We'll see you all on the next one. Bye for now.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Scrappy ABM. If you enjoyed this week's episode, go ahead and give us a follow so that you don't miss a single episode. We drop every single Monday so that you can start your week off right. And if you're looking for additional great content just like this, go check out scrappyabm.com. We're building a library of frameworks, guides, templates, processes, and tools so you have everything that you need to build a low-budget, high-impact, scrappy program. Again, thank you for listening to this episode of Scrappy ABM. This has been your host, Mason Cosby, and we look forward to seeing you in the next one.